Perception versus reality. Among the few things I have to talk about in this edition of the Todd Wright Toddcast. Thank you for listening. I have continued to make all of my podcasts free of charge via joebucksfan.com and other platforms. That has been my goal since I started this. And I have some sponsors that pay me so you don't have to pay for the podcast. So give me a minute to remind you that Brandon Legal Group is a full-service law firm servicing the greater Tampa Bay area. For a free consult when you are in need of legal assistance, visit brandonlegalgroup.com to make that request. Or if you prefer to call, that's fine. 813-902-3576. We are coming up on the two-year anniversary of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis essentially signing out of law permanent alimony in the state of Florida. So, if you are an adult male and you are a state of Florida resident and you continue to make permanent alimony payments, the law is on your side, and Brandon Legal Group would love to tell you more about reducing or potentially eliminating future permanent alimony payments. That's one of the services they offer you. 813-902-3576 or visit brandonlegalgroup.com for a free consult. Plantation Palms Golf Club in Land O'Lakes. I played there just over the weekend, enjoyed myself, got in a late afternoon round. The cloud cover and a slight breeze was very welcoming for a June afternoon round of golf. I also got my first look at the newly renovated tee boxes on the par 3 7th and the par 3 17th. These have been very professionally and expensively done by Jesse Pratt and staff and ownership at Plantation Palms Golf Club. Further shows he cares about every aspect of the property, and they look great. I didn't get to play them because the sod was still taking hold. It was still an area under repair, so we played from temporary tees, but you can see photos of them on my social media pages, either my Facebook page, Todd Wright in Tampa, Florida, or my Instagram, at ToddWright2121. Plantation Palms also posted some drone footage of what they did on 7 and I believe 17 to check it out for yourself. They continue their summer scrambles every Thursday, 9-hole team events, very inexpensive at 5:30 p.m. There's Mulligan's mini golf, and even though we have tons of daylight, remember the range has lights, so does the mini golf. If you prefer to get out there in the evening, visit plantationpalms.net for more information on everything going on at Plantation Palms Golf Club. They will host another Todd Wright Tour golf event later in 2025. My email is wright.todd@yahoo.com. If it's anything golf related, you can shoot me a note at toddwrightgolf@gmail.com. By the way, because I've been soliciting some email responses, let's go back to when I was at Pin Chasers for Drew Garabo's annual Down to Bowl charity fundraiser, a favorite event of so many people. And I always spend money to attempt to win prizes because Drew, Mike O, put out various prizes. And I buy probably more tickets than anybody else for either me, my friends, or prizes to give away at my golf tournaments. I said this on the podcast right after I won these tickets. I said, if anyone would like to go see Shakira in Orlando, I won two tickets, not upper level tickets. If you'd like to go, email me. No one did. They went unused. All you had to do was reach out if you wanted free Shakira tickets. Nobody did. That was telling. And I saw some awesome female friends went and posted videos. They also didn't reach out to me for free tickets. but it looked like a fun show. I would have just, you're saying, why didn't you go? I would have just gotten in trouble. I would have. You put that many great looking women having a phenomenal time watching Shakira in a building like that. I hate to say this. Nothing good's going to happen for me. Nothing good's going to come of it for me. Look great on social media. It's why he was giving away the tickets. None of you took me up on it. Why? Don't make that mistake again. As anyone who plays in my golf tournaments knows, I give away good stuff. And I'm happy to spend my own money to win some items like that to support Drew Garabo, Mike O, 102.5 The Bone, etc. All right, a few things. How are we going to do this? Golf first. J.J. Spahn wins the U.S. Open. This will likely be a one-off. I understand that a few months earlier, he was in a playoff to win the Players' Championship, one of the more respected non-majors out there. It's basically the PGA Tour's highest level individual event. It doesn't quite pay what the Tour Championship does, but the Tour Championship functions as a season-ending reward. J.J. Spahn got in a three-hole aggregate playoff on Monday morning against Rory McIlroy, and I will argue didn't hit one good golf shot the entire playoff. But he didn't go away, and he comes back, and despite never finishing top 20 in any major championship in his career, and he's essentially the same age as Rory. Don't think this is a young guy. He's not old, but he's basically the same age as Rory. The difference is, I think, less than a year. Spahn goes out and basically wire to wire wins the United States Open on a very difficult golf course. I know I was there in 2007, the final day when Angel Cabrera held off Tiger Woods to win. I hated walking the course as a spectator because of the hilly terrain and the inability to really get a good look at anything. So I vowed I'm never coming back to this course unless I'm invited to play. I like Pittsburgh. I didn't like being a spectator at a U.S. Open at Oakmont. Might have been the only thing worse than for the players trying to break par at Oakmont, because Spahn was the only one, was for the spectators, which was made worse by the rains. While I firmly believe, and this is one of the things I don't like about the golf media in general, they will pander to winning players. And they will say all the right things to get on their side and almost treat the player like an actor and the sport like an infomercial. I don't, which is probably why I don't actively work for PGA Tour Entertainment or PGA Tour Radio on Sirius XM anymore, because I have journalistic integrity. I don't feel a lot in the golf media do. I think writers do more than broadcasters. So pardon me for not listening to those who went on air after Spahn's win saying, well, this is the beginning of something big. No, I've seen this before. I know what this is. Spahn, that's the height of his career right there. And he should enjoy it and milk it for everything it's got. Not just the exemptions, the money. That's it. I don't think it's going to get any better than that for him. I don't think he'll win another major. I don't think he'll contend for another major. Maybe a top 10. Maybe a top 20. But no. One and done. One off. Compare it to Michael Campbell. Compare it to, what's another good one? Jimmy Walker. Rich Beam. That's what I think it is. I do. That's my opinion, and it's based on a lot of facts. A lot more facts than people saying, well, he's going to go on and win more majors. That's not based on facts. What I have is. Where I want to correct something is for those who will only remember that Spahn made this 60-plus foot putt on 18 to win the tournament. First of all, he didn't need to make the putt to win the tournament. He needed two putts from there to win the tournament and just made the putt. It's to his credit. So he birdied 18. He also had birdied 17. The birdie putt on 17, while not easy, was a lot shorter, but was made possible by the tee shot. So I will not remember Spahn winning this U.S. Open. And over the years, it will become more of a trivia question. But people will remember the putt. Yeah, remember the putt that won the U.S. Open? Eh, not technically right. Spahn had a very long putt on 12. Spahn had a lengthy putt on 14. Spahn had a phenomenal drive into the par 4 17th that allowed him two putts to make birdie to take the lead going to 18-tee. And then on 18, he made a very long putt when two putts would win. It wasn't the putt on 18 that won him the tournament. It was all the things I listed and things he overcame that others did not. And Robert McIntyre was one shot short. By the way, that morning of the final round, McIntyre was 150-1 on Hard Rock Bet in Florida, and I had money on Robert McIntyre to win the United States Open. I was that close. McIntyre also looks like if the kid from Goonies ended up playing professional golf to me. From that to hockey, the Hart Trophy was announced recently, and not a surprise, Connor Hellebuyck was voted by the biased hockey media, many of which have Canadian roots, as the MVP. Those of you who listen to this podcast often hear me talk about the blatant myopic view of Canadian franchises by Canadian hockey media. It's almost like they don't watch American teams, that they only watch an American team play when it's on in their country against a Canadian team. And even then, they might be watching more of the Canadian team play than the American team play. It bothers them that they've gone 30 years without winning a Stanley Cup, so they can vote on awards. It's almost like, well, if we're not going to win cups, we're going to win the major awards. Just look at the pattern of players on Canadian-based hockey franchises that win MVP in recent years. It's bitterness. It's childish. It's ignorant. It's biased, and it's not right. Connor Hellebuyck became just the third goaltender in the 21st century to win the Hart Trophy as the league MVP. He plays for the Winnipeg Jets. Would you like to guess what teams the other two goaltenders who have been voted NHL league MVP played for? They both, two separate guys, played for the Montreal Canadiens. Of note, none of those three MVP goaltenders, teams, got past the first round of that year's Stanley Cup playoffs. One lost in the first round. So the total combined playoff series wins for the three league MVP goaltenders in the 21st century, all from Canadian franchises, is two playoff series wins. And I think most of you know Connor Hellebuyck lived down to the name I gave him in these Stanley Cup playoffs. He was the worst goaltender in these Stanley Cup playoffs. Another example of the bias and collusion that goes on with the hockey writers in Canada voting for their own. Nick Suzuki finished ninth for MVP. Ninth. You only get to vote for a top five. For many of you who even watch hockey, you probably haven't even thought about him. How does Suzuki finish ninth for league MVP when he wasn't top 10 in any of these categories this year? Ready? Points, goals, assists, game-winning goals, power play goals. Also, his team barely made the playoffs and lost in the first round. Where's the value? How the hell is Nick Suzuki valuable? How can you elevate him to a ninth place finish in MVP voting when he's not top 10 in any key skater forward category and his team was not a Stanley Cup contender? You know why? Because of the Canadian bitterness and bias. We don't win cups, but we're going to win awards. It's bad. It's really awful. Was going down a wormhole recently, NFL offseason, and I found a new page I liked on social media. It doesn't mean it's always right, but one of the things they did, they do something seemingly daily, just as sort of a talking point. They listed all 32 NFL franchises, and they categorized what position the best player on the team plays. Right? So you had quarterback, running back. By the way, the only running back was Philadelphia. Wide receiver, offensive line. Then I think it was like defensive line, either edge, linebacker, DB, something like that. I forget how they categorized edge, pass rusher, or linebacker, but because I know Dallas with Micah Parsons was in that category. Same was Cleveland. So I'm looking at this and I'm saying, all right, what is my takeaway from this? Assume I'm just going with the players they picked. I could probably go through the 32 teams and argue that one or half a dozen, wait, it's not that player who's the best player on that team, it's this player. But I'm just going with who they anointed as the best player. And they didn't. They just used logos for the teams. I agree with most of them. For example, they had Dallas's logo representing Micah Parsons. I agree. He's the best player on the Dallas Cowboys. They had Myles Garrett for the Cleveland Browns. I agree. He's the best player on the Cleveland Browns. Here was my takeaway. Washington's best player was in the quarterback category. Detroit's best player was in the offensive line category. Not Ragnow, who just retired, Sewell. Philadelphia's best player was in the running back category, Barkley. Only one listed at running back for all 32 teams. Rams' best player was listed as wide receiver. They have Nacua there. I could make an argument one of these young guys in the front seven is going to be the Rams' best player going forward if Nacua can't stay on the field. But for now, okay. Again, going with what they said. Ravens, they had it as quarterback. Bills, they had it as quarterback. Okay. Chiefs, they had it as quarterback. Texans, I think they had that as offensive lineman. I think they had that as Tunsil. Why am I talking about those eight? Those eight were your final eight teams in the NFL last year. Those were the eight teams that were in the divisional playoff round. They win, they're in the conference championship. They win that, they're in the Super Bowl. So they were the top eight. My point? All eight of those franchises that made the divisional round, best player, offensive side of the ball. It backs up what I've been saying here on the podcast for years and how the trend is head coaches who have an offensive background or are involved with the offense, either play calling, work with the quarterback, making decisions offensively, are the only teams that go to Super Bowls anymore. Add to it, the only teams that contend for Super Bowls put the most effort, money, scouting, your best player is on the offensive side of the ball. That's what wins in the NFL these days. The Todd Wright Toddcast, presented by Brandon Legal Group and Plantation Palms Golf Club. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.